Hello and welcome to The Truth About Public Sector with Hannah Quinn Hill. Join me as we cut through the jargon and deep dive into the realities of public sector procurement, policy and operation. Each episode brings honest conversations, expert insights and no-nonsense discussions about all the challenges, successes and behind-the-scenes workings of the sector. Whether you're a seasoned professional, a newcomer or just curious about how the public sector really operates, this is the podcast for you. So let's get to the truth and let's get started. I'm absolutely thrilled today to be joined by somebody who is quite a well-known public speaker, Michael McLaughlin, who is the Group Social Value Manager for LHC. Hi, Michael.
Good morning, Hannah. How are you?
Really good, thank you. Really good. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm speaking to you a lot at the moment, which is really exciting because you're taking part in our podcast, you come into our directors' networking events, and you're doing lots of public speaking genuinely as well. So thank you very much for making the time to have a chat with us today. If I can, Mike, I'd really love to kick off with your journey into the public sector and how you became, because you're really well known for your social value work and your passion around that. So what got you into procurement and social value?
A really interesting question, Hannah. I have worked within the social housing sector for just over 21 years, working predominantly, as my accent suggests, north of the border in housing associations in Scotland. And I suppose what I saw there was a sector that delivered lots and lots of great stuff, but actually really struggled to articulate the value of what they were doing. And I suppose in some sense, there wasn't a day that went by that I couldn't see the huge impact we were making to people's lives. But actually what you see about social housing often in the press is the negative stuff. And I felt there was something about that didn't ring true. And I worked in, you know, real different roles across a housing association, a lot of that around data. And without boring people too much, I think data is hugely important when it comes to, I suppose, you know, any element of the public sector. But when you're looking after people's lives, when you're trying to provide impact to people's lives, actually how we characterise the information we have around them, how we use that and how that affects our decision making, you know, purely thinking about procurement around, you know, building safety and the golden thread, actually data is really, really important in that. So that was a kind of really important roles, and I thought that was really key to get that right. But I didn't look at it as a boring kind of data role. I almost looked at it as a, how do you support tenants and residents? How do we look after their data? How do we maximise what we get from that? And that got me involved in a lot of work around digital inclusion. And how do we, if we're spending, you know, 5% of our organisational turnover on IT, how are our tenants and residents accessing it? What's external facing? And I ended up managing a community digital inclusion programme funded by Scottish Government. And I suppose for me, that was that kind of very much front-facing community. We were based in a community centre in one of the areas of highest deprivation in Scotland, which, you know, we delivered real significant outcomes. But how did we talk about that? How could we measure the success we had? So I went from working for a housing association to working for a partnership between the Scottish Federation of Housing Associations, who oversee the social housing sector in Scotland, and HACT, Housing Association Charitable Trust. Now, HACT have their own social value methodology, and it's very much based on well-being. And I suppose for me, how I got into working for HACT and developing my kind of skills around social value was about thinking about digital, really. I think about digital was a real driver of change to people's lives. So if they didn't have access to the internet, actually they were being left behind. They had statistically less opportunities, less finances. They struggled for employment and educational attainment. And actually, so I was at the time focused on digital, but the more I moved to a kind of more strategic level at SVHA and at HACT, actually understanding that digital is just one driver of change. And how do we understand change? And for me, that place-based approach, so working for in a community centre, working in a community, in particular areas with community anchor institutions who more often than not are either in the public sector or connected to the public sector. That's where change happens and how we interpret change. And I think that's that really developed my understanding of what I see as social value and I suppose how the public sector and the built environment actually are huge drivers of change within communities and within that place-based setting. So yeah, it's been, you know, a hugely engaging journey. I've loved it. I love working in social housing and with the public sector and working for LHC now in that kind of procurement aspect of it. It's great because we often, and I'm sure we'll touch upon this as we go through, but we often think about the impact that we make in communities, you know, as being very touchy-feely, kind of tree-hugging. But actually, procurement is a really, really good, sharp example of there's legislation we require to do X, Y, and Z. But actually, if you do it right, if you engage the right people and do it with the right spirit, it is a huge driver for change. So being able to see that at national and regional level, which we're seeing at LHC, is terrific. And, you know, we now solely work with public sector clients and the suppliers who work with them. So it's really interesting. And we see the value of the work that happens in the public sector every day.
One of the things that I really enjoy listening to you speak when we've had conversations previously and just now is the animation that you give the social value in procurement in social housing, because I think there's, you know, almost like a call to arms of actually you can do a procurement job in social housing and you will see directly in your community the difference that's making and how that's making a difference to, you know, SME suppliers or just local tenants in healthcare, in careers, you know, the full lifespan of a community. And you really give that breadth of meaning, which I absolutely love. So I'm really excited to delve into more questions with you because you just put it in layman's terms. It's really easy to digest. So I think my next question in that case is keeping on the social value conversation, and it is something we hear all the time. You know, we go to events or we look in the media and it's social value, but how do you actually define social value in the context of public sector procurement?
So, I mean, it's an excellent question, and a question that I was going to say procurement, but I would probably go wider than that the full public sector and the UK struggle with. And I actually think, you know, you said previously that, you know, social value and procurement is something you see the difference of in communities. And that's only if it's done well. And I think because often social value is included in procurement tenders and it's forecast in projects. And we don't see real change. So we talk about social value as if it's a numbers on a page job. And actually, you know, for me, it's about the definition of social value. So it's a really interesting question to ask. So, you know, the Social Value International define social value as being a kind of more than the monetary value. And you start thinking about the impact it has on people and people's lives. And, you know, I previously worked for HACT, who focus on their definition being about the non-financial impact of the work that's done on people and communities, and that's felt through how they feel about themselves, their well-being. So there's a couple of parts to that, because I think that's to move away from using layman's terms. When we get into these definitions, it becomes something that almost seems conceptual, something that people find it hard to access, and that's why I think it's really difficult for people to see that change, to use social value as a driver for change, but which, you know, it has to be. You know, procurement itself can never deliver social value. However, within procurement activity, we can provide and enable the foundations for social value to be delivered. You know, procurement just buying things. You know, it's but actually in that process of buying things, in the engagement you have with clients, with suppliers, in the pre-planning and the kind of progress, how we take social value to another level and almost have it as really project critical information and progress and KPIs is really significant. But anyway, I think in terms of the definition of it, for me, it's really about the social and economic benefits that we can create in communities. And that's what social value is. Now, it's interesting because the new Procurement Act and the National Procurement Policy Statement speaks about social values being the additional value, the additional social and economic value we can create through public sector contracts. And I think that's to miss a trick almost. You know, when you think about the built environment itself, you think about building 100 houses, building a hospital, building a school. Actually, the change that enables just by having that building in a fit for purpose area, providing fit for purpose services is ridiculously high. I was going to say immeasurably high, but that would go to fly in the face of everything else I talk about having measurable targets. But I think it's really important that we consider that social value isn't just the additional benefits. Social value is the nuts and bolts of what we do. So in, you know, procurement, particularly around development, actually we're building infrastructure, public sector infrastructure, that's going to change and improve the life across the UK. That in itself provides huge social value. So therefore, we should be capturing the social value that the built environment provide. Then we should be capturing the social value that can be delivered through good partnership working, through good community benefit clauses, and that kind of stuff. So I think it's really interesting. If we don't capture the right definition of social value, and we think about social value as being something that wins as tenders, something that's just on a page, then it doesn't deliver the change that you and I, you know can be delivered, and we see that every day. So actually, it's really important that we have even if it's not an agreed definition, an alignment between what the client sees social value and what the supplier plan to deliver as social value. Because if not, what happens at the end of a contract? The client says, "I feel disappointed. We didn't really deliver the impact that we thought we were going to, or we could have." And the supplier's probably sitting there thinking, "We would have done anything you asked us to do for that," but there wasn't clear dialogue. So that's why that early engagement piece is really important. That's why it has to play a really key component in all the progress and update meetings through the life cycle of a contract. And it has really to be, you know, a kind of ongoing KPI rather than at the end of the project, what have we done? How can we report on it and move on?
And I think you've hit a few interesting things there, because, you know, I've written a few bids myself in my time. And I think a lot of the time there's a question around what added, you know, what social value can you add to our organisation, which is such a huge open question. You know, it's a massive open question. And I think that in terms of the procurement community, there's often a concern about, okay, so we're asking this question, but how do we score that question? And then in terms of contracts management, how do we follow up with suppliers and make sure they're delivering that? And then how do we quantify what it is that they're saying their social value will be? Because it is so broad, it's so open, you know, it's often not a particular digit of, you know, we'll do X amount of this.
Yes.
It's really hard, isn't it? As a context, it's so broad, you almost can't put your fingers on it and grab it and say, right, this is what it is.
And I think that is the case. And that's why I often talk about a place-based approach. So we have to lean heavily on the public sector clients. They know the local area, they know the local needs, and they know the local community. So actually, what we should be mirroring what they see as being the priority in those areas. We should be mirroring what they see as being the social value priority of this particular build or procurement exercise. And I think that's what's really key. So the work we're doing at LHC is to have what we see as being kind of UK-wide. So LHC are a nationwide organisation, public procurement framework provider, but have kind of regional units. And what we do, lean heavily on those regional units to understand the kind of complexities and the particular needs in areas. When we develop frameworks, we're doing that in response to the need of the public sector. But actually, as part of the the kind of ITTs in that, and as part of the kind of call-offs, what we're saying is, you know, what's your social value priority? Work with us to help us think about how you measure that. And you're right, some of these things are not binary. We're going to deliver 10 apprenticeships, we're going to deliver that. Actually, what we're seeing is wider areas than that. So we want to improve the kind of energy efficiency in a particular area, or we want to improve financial income of a particular cohort of people. You know, sometimes it can be defined but vague, and I think so we lean heavily on that. But actually, where clients are saying we don't know where to start, having a bit of a kind of a framework or a strategy that we can say, well, here's what we suggest. And that's the work we've done across the UK. What we provide for clients and suppliers is, here's our plan for this types of project, almost as a menu of options. Tell us what kind of impacts you want to provide. Now, the next step for that, and I think, you know, you rightly talk about how we then evidence that through the contract. And I think that's again, will be different for each supplier. Actually, how are they going to measure success in that? And I think it's very much like any KPI. As long as you've got a consistent methodology, as long as there's evidence to back it up, you know, we don't have to say we're delivering £10 million of social value for this. Actually, you might not use a financial proxy at all. You might use numbers of people. You might use number of engagements. But I think it's really important to move away from that very binary 10 apprenticeships, 10 jobs, 100 hours of mental health support, or, you know, whatever it is, the community benefits you want to add to that, or whatever it is you want to measure success in this project as being. Because what if they had no impact on people? You know, so what if through a project you said, we're going to measure the success of this retrofitting of 100 properties to bring them to, you know, so you could say, well, we're going to measure if we brought them to EPCB. But actually, what if they brought them to EPCB, but the people within those properties are still saying, but actually our heating bills are as high or higher, or it might be energy efficient, but we're cold in the houses. So actually having a holistic approach on what are we measuring, but then also think about what the kind of softer side of that, what's the impact on people's lives, and that might be through the actual build, or it might be through the community benefits you've enabled. So they might say, well, we're providing support to local groups who are going to work with people to understand the fuel poverty, to provide fuel vouchers. Well, actually, again, rather than just saying they provided £10,000 to the local community, think about what was the impact of that £10,000. You know, particularly during COVID, we often heard people talking about, as community benefits, providing mental health support in the community. Mm. But actually, what if the organisation you're working with weren't qualified to deliver that support? What if the person delivering that was off sick? You know, what if that 100 hours wasn't used well? How, you know, that's not, we're not measuring the impact, we're measuring the activity. So we do need to move away from measuring financial inputs and activity and measure outcomes and long-term impact. And I think that's where we have to have very clear measurable targets. So forecasting, so saying, yeah, we're going to deliver, you know, these types of programs, these are the types of outcomes, like we're going to how a person feels about their mental health, for example, and actually can we track that? Do we have touch points? And that's the bit that people are afraid of, because we think, how does a supplier, how does an appointed company on a framework deliver or can measure the success they have? Now, this is where the public sector have a real advantage. Public sector, place-based organisations, they will have touch points with residents. They will want to be reporting on this. So from my work in social housing, a lot of the work they do is around tenant satisfaction. They do a lot of, you know, at least 10%, most much higher, of post-works inspections and tenant satisfaction surveys. So actually, how are we using these touch points to find out the information that we want to know about the impact of the works? Not necessarily because we want to say, we've created £10 million of social value, look at us, we're great, we're doing brilliant work for poor people, you know, that kind of patronising view. Actually, I mentioned at the start that Hatt's view of social value being the non-financial impact of the work we do on people and communities. Now, we say non-financial because private sector measures success through finance. So how profitable, how successful something is how much money you make. But the public sector are not built to do that. You don't build a hospital for it to be a financial success. You're going to spend money on that on an ongoing basis forever. It's about the outcomes you achieve. So it's really important that we think about, you know, we're measuring the outcomes that we're going to achieve over a long period of time. And actually, the touch points that these often community anchor institutions are in this area forever will have, can we use that information, those touch points you have, to tell us about that impact, that long-term success you have? How are you measuring that success? It has to involve stakeholder engagement, talking to local people, understanding success in that ways. Now, there are some kind of using average data sets and using average impact figures to understand what's the average impact of someone getting a job, for example, and looking at financial proxies, really useful. Actually, we need to integrate that kind of more engaged, you know, people often say social value is great, you know, the numbers are great, but the most important things is stories. And we need to use those stories, we need to use engagement with people for us to understand how well we are delivering social value and how well we are using procurement to deliver that social value for the public sector.
And that's a big change, isn't it? Because I think that when we thought about social value historically, and you look at some invitations to tender, and the social value measurement feels like a box ticking exercise. It feels like actually the value of that in terms of how you're going to be, you know, successful and be awarded that contract, it's often the lowest of percentages in terms of scoring. You know, you're focusing much more on the cost and the quality of what it is you're delivering than the social value and the additional, you know, additional value it's often listed as of what you can do. And so one of the things that I would really love to know, because it is, you know, super important that we're using procurement people in the profession are using data and technology to make sure that this has been done appropriately. You know, you've worked with data and digital inclusion. How does that help improve social value initiatives? How does that help organisations really deliver social value and recognise that social value?
I mean, there's a whole different ways of looking at this. I think, you know, we need data to measure success. You know, we need the kind of KPIs, we need good data governance. So actually, public sector organisations having the right technology to collect that data is really important. You know, I think it helps us be proactive, it helps us have insights, rather than, again, at the end of a project saying something was a success or a failure and then looking for a blame culture. Actually, what told us the direction of travel? And if you're measuring and reporting upon social value and impact in that way, it's really important. Now, digital inclusion itself, as I mentioned, people being online, you know, social housing tenants are we're statistically kind of 40% less likely to be online regularly. We know that people who are not online, as I said before, have a range of disadvantages. So actually, it's really important for the public sector to ensure that people are included digitally. Now, when you do that, you also have more touch points with them. It's easier to collect data when people are digitally included. It's then easy for that data to flow into your decision-making process, go into your CRM system, but help you calculate the social value of that, help understand the insights of the difference that you're making. So actually, I think digital inclusion itself is really important for the people you're supporting. I think it brings them closer to the job market. It creates taxation. People online, as I say, statistically have more income, statistically have better health indicators. And for all those things, actually, they use less NHS services, they use less DWP support, and they create taxation. So actually, it's a bit of a circular economy. If you spend money on digital inclusion, ensure people are online, you save the country money long term. So that's important to them. It's important to public sector organisations because they have the information from people. And it's important for, as I say, wider society, because you can then make those kind of wider, more strategic changes, and you can understand that with the data you're collecting through it. So I think it's, you know, I'm quite passionate about digital inclusion, but again, it's only one driver of change. You know, the level of kind of community engagement and promoting customer voice, you know, that the kind of work that was done around kind of isolation and mental health support during COVID, really, really significant in communities, and makes a, you know, these are all drivers of change. And actually, how do we use the public sector? How do we use the levers that procurement provides us to enable that, to enable us access to people, to people's lives that we can improve? Because we know the data tells us that people's lives need to be improved. You know, that the impact of the cost of living crisis and the kind of post-COVID economy is still significant. People are still in food poverty. Fuel poverty, you know, as some of the numbers came out on the first of the month there, it's likely to increase again, particularly when you think about homes and how do we build warm homes. And I think that's really important in terms of that fuel poverty piece, and how do people afford the appropriate housing and stuff. So I think, you know, there's a whole range of levers and drivers for change. And I think because of the way we talk about procurement, because social value often is only really spoken about in organisations around procurement. And that's why I think, you know, you're right. Sometimes it's just box ticking and someone wins a contract because of it. And I think we do need to move away from that. And that's huge. And I think the Public Procurement Act enacted, I was going to say last month, and it's February, wasn't it? I know it's February because it was on my wife's birthday, so that's what I remember. That's how I remember my wife's birthday, not the other way around. So the Procurement Act, people spoke about the wording around the regard it has for social and economic benefits as part of contracts has been huge. And I think that's, you know, but for me, it was a variation on a theme from the Social Value Act of 2012. And I think for me, what the most important part was the move from most economically advantageous tender to most advantageous tender. So yeah, I think it's really important. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the moving to incorporate, rather than shutting something off, is more to incorporate something else as part of that value for money process is really important. So almost, it's not necessarily about the percentage that you have social value attached to it. Actually, we're considering this in the round. Social value shouldn't just be, yep, that's 10%, yeah, that's social value, done, tick. Actually, does that align with the rest of the project? Does that align with the needs of the community and the potential deliverability, if that's a word, for the supplier? So yeah,
it's you know, it's really interesting because I think about what we discuss in terms of social value and digital inclusion, and then I think, you know, generationally sometimes this can get lost, because historically when we think about poverty, there's very clear poverty, you know, that everybody's familiar with, that's awful, and you think in a country as economically as advantageous as we are, you wouldn't expect to see it, but there it is. And then there's other types of poverty, as you've so well illustrated, such as, you know, the digital poverty, the poverty in terms of petrol, being able to get to places. And people underestimate the impact that has socially, because if you can't afford to fill your car, you can't afford to get to work. You know, if you're not online, you're not able to apply for roles or hear about vacancies to gain work. You know, all these things that really impact our economy come from these first places. And so I think from a supplier perspective, we need to be more creative about what we can offer in terms of social value, and stop going for what feels like the obvious answers. You know, if you're a recruiter, it's going to be, I'll help so many people do their CVs. Let's move away from those kinds of areas and start thinking about what's actually going to benefit that community the best. Absolutely. And how can we affect that?
Sorry, Hannah. I think one of the things that I think, because I think that's really important, and actually thinking about who else is delivering this type of work in a community. So, you know, when and this is not a criticism of suppliers, it's just it's the function of what you do. So you deliver a project in an area or for an organization for a set period of time, and then you move on to deliver that in other areas. But actually, I say it till I'm blue in the face, the community anchor institutions are there forever. So actually working with the public sector client, working with their partners to say the CV stuff, for example, that's great, you know, that and that's an admirable target. If employability is what's needed in that area, how can we put, what's the type of support? Is there already loads of CV workshops that are available? Maybe it's about signposting those, and rather than spending money on it, look at ways you can ensure more people get access to that. You know, it might be around paying for transport to get to those classes, or finding out where the needs are. Because I think it always goes back to what the local needs are and how do people access local support. And almost that's irrelevant of what local support it is. If you can signpost to the right community anchor institutions, they'll signpost everywhere else as well. So it's really important that we think about creatively about, rather than just providing, you know, we'll give 1% of this of the, you know, the money to a community benefit pot. What's that going to spend? What are you spending that on? Who are you giving it to? Does that person have a track record of improving people's lives? If not, don't bother. You know, it's and it's not a criticism again. It's just because people do it with the best intention. Easter's coming up. You'll see a whole range of stuff on LinkedIn of people in areas delivering Easter eggs to schools.
Yep.
Yeah. What's the impact of that? You know, it's a one-off event that has no long-term impact. You know, and some might say in terms of not particularly healthy either. But I think if you're doing that as a first step to engagement, to work with people over a long period of time, great, that makes sense because you get a bit of trust and relationship, you develop that. But if you're just delivering that, you spend a fortune, go around all the local schools, you know, it's a waste of money, frankly. It's not delivering long-term impact. And even if you provided, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, a member of staff to go and work to counsel people in that school, but it might be job counselling, it could be mental health counselling, for the same cost that you spent on those Easter eggs. So it might be they're in for half a day every month or whatever. You'll make more long-term impact than you would from, you know, a buttons Easter egg.
It's not marketable on Instagram, though, is it?
No,
and
it is
I think
not.
That's
it
the
is
issue
not.
There, isn't it, Michael? It's going for the quick wins, using social value as an avenue and a vehicle to win more business by being able to post it on places. That's what I always think when I see those things. It's like,
absolutely.
Oh, crikey.
It also showed that I'm a lot more boring than you, because I use LinkedIn as an example and you used Instagram. So
generational gap right there.
Absolutely.
Final question for you today, because I'm going to invite you back to answer more questions, because I think this is a longer conversation that we could go on about forever,
sure.
Because it's so important, because it's so key. If you could implement one major change, just one, to improve social value adoption across the public sector, you know, housing, local authority, trust, NHS, full works, what would it be?
Again, it sounds a bit boring, but I let me unravel it very slightly. And it speaks to the point I've already made. It's about social value information being used as business critical information. So, you know, almost like when you need to do your finance returns, what's your social value returns? That has a monetary value, the impact you're making. Be allowed to report on that with the same amount of assurance, accuracy and confidence. So if people had the confidence in social value, some of that's about kind of cultural kind of pushback. Some of it's about people saying, I don't trust, that's too big a number. But actually, for me, it's really important. If we want social value to be used properly, if we want it to make real change, people have to value the information we have around it. And so for me, it's really important. And you know, there are some stuff, particularly around non-financial reporting rather than just social value, which it sits in that bucket, around CSRD, so the kind of environmental reporting across the EU. And I think that's really interesting to see if that comes in, because if we can report upon social value and with the same robustness, then actually people take it seriously. And when someone's, you know, spending £10,000 rather than buying 10,000 Easter eggs, they might change 10,000 lives over the period of that contract, which I think should be able to be put on a balance sheet. Should the value of that to people's lives, the value of that to your organisation, and the value of that to the wider society should be accounted for somewhere, should be not just reported on in a glossy document to make you look great corporately, but actually be used to make real decision making and help us understand the insights that change has on people's lives.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's a really, really good way to finish the podcast, because it's a call to arms to make sure people are delivering that social value. So thank you so much, Michael. I have absolutely loved our conversation. I always do. Really enjoy speaking to you. I'm really looking forward to having you back in the future.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Hannah. Take care.
Thank you.